turn our attention now to a far more interesting human being than Alex. His name is Kevin Pillay, and he has spent 25 years, this man, in automotive, travel, and financial services. So he's worked at Avis, Fidelity, Sunlum. He now heads up corporate sales at Woodford Car Hire, which I have seen and I have heard of, and I think I've used you guys once or twice before when I was in either Cape Town or Durban or both. But it's a great pleasure to have you on. It's time for the window seat, and here is Kevin Pillay. Hey, Kevin. I'm sorry you had to live through Alex's interview as well. That must have been very, very scarring for you.
I actually had quite a lot of fun listening to it. In fact, Alex, if you could share a couple of those names, that would be awesome. Not for me, just for a few buddies, because my mom's also listening to this. So,
Okay. Well, I'm gonna keep both of us out of trouble then. So, all right, let's talk about what we do on the window seat for people who are new to this. Is we talk about travel, we talk about tourism. It's a massive part of the South African economy. It's a hugely important part of our economy because it generates massive amounts of GDP. Obviously, in South Africa, we're discovering new and creative ways to travel locally and internationally. But you guys are you're not the first name, maybe yet, but you will be, that pops into people's heads when they think of car hire. But you do a lot more than that. Tell us a little bit about the origins of the company and where Woodford comes from and what exactly your positioning is, because I think it's useful for people to know this stuff.
Yeah, so I think it's important to realize of where Woodford started. I mean, it's the company was founded in 1957, literally in very humble beginnings, in a little place called Woodford Grove in Durban, just off Mgeni Road, not far from where I am right now.
I know exactly where that is.
That's how they are. So that's how the name came about. So our founder was Mr. Suleiman. He started the business, Gareth, with literally two vehicles. And fast forward just over 35 odd years now, and proud to say that we have a massive fleet, that the company's really grown. What's interesting to know is that just about 3 years ago, we signed a franchise agreement with actually the largest car rental company globally, which is known as Enterprise.
Right.
So we operate this brand, which is Enterprise and Woodford. But Woodford is now actually probably one of the largest privately owned car rental companies in South Africa. We're proud BE Level 1.
Wow.
And yeah, so there's a lot happening. I've joined the company just 3 years ago. Like you mentioned, I was with a different car rental company, and then I decided to change fields, moved around. COVID taught us a very hard lesson. So most of us had to find different ways of putting food on the table. And then I found my way back to car rental, and it's been amazing. I think working with a private organization, there's that loop of flexibility that you can have where we don't just want to treat customers like customers. We have that personal touch with them. And the nice thing about working with a private company is that we touch our customers, we sit down with them, we engage with them. We don't treat them like a number. And people love and appreciate that today. They don't want to just be a number anymore.
Isn't it true that in any business, the difference and the part of the value exchange that you can't really quantify is that personal relationship? And I know that you work with a lot of our friends at Tourvest, and you guys are actually part of the Tourvest group, which is an amazing and powerful and extraordinary success story in South Africa. But for ordinary customers, what has been happening in the world of car hire? You know, we've spoken to people who market and run airlines, and that business is so competitive and the margins are so thin, and you have to really think outside of the box and come up with totally new and creative ideas to be able to market yourselves. How hard is it in the world of car hire? Because these days, of course, you're not just competing with other car hire groups, but you're competing with Uber. You're competing with people whose granny's going to fetch them from the airport. You're competing with people who are doing very different things. They're hiring like supercars for the weekend if they've got lots of money, or they're walking if they've got no money. So you're competing with everybody.
Absolutely. And I think the most important thing to realize is that you have to stay relevant all the time. I mean, do you want to compete with every different competitor, so to say? Do I want to go head to head with the likes of Uber? Maybe, maybe not. What I will do is I will put forward my offering, and I will sell my offering in the best way possible. Let's unpack that a little bit. So if you look at let's talk about the airlines, because airlines is a big one. Right? Apart from the car rental, which we all compete with, we all rent cars, we all have rental locations, all of our staff dress in this wonderful uniforms. They all speak friendly and politely. You have to be able to separate yourself. So if you look at the different segments within the car rental competitors, what do I offer a corporate customer that's really going to tick off those pain points that they're currently experiencing with somebody else? So I'll tackle that on one issue. If I look at a leisure customer, and especially with the fuel price increase, and flights have increased quite a bit, right? Their flight costs have gone insane. So I want to market that being saying to you, Gareth, listen, you've got four people that you want to travel to Joburg, or coming from Joburg, you want to come to Durban with. Just hop into a Woodford vehicle. We'll make it fun for you. And we'll take away some of those pain points that you don't have to pay a one-way fee between Durban and Joburg, or we'll cut down the cost on your mileage. We'll give you more mileage so that you're not paying more and paying more and paying more. Suddenly, right, you have this wonderful road trip that's not 45 minutes long. It's actually 6 hours long, but we'll suggest little spots that you stop along the way so that you make it eventful. You make it memorable for the family. You know what I mean?
So tell me, what kind of pressure is there on you guys and on everyone else in your sector of the industry to keep a massive inventory of different vehicles? Because it used to be back in the old days, and I'm aging myself here by saying this, but it used to be that everyone had Nissan Almiras, Toyota whatevers, and they looked the same. They're all white or silver. And they had cloth seats. And, you know, obviously things have changed an enormous amount since then. But I remember when I used to DJ all over the country, I would always get a car. And that gave me the freedom to be able to travel wherever I wanted to, get to the hotel, go and do the things I wanted to do, see the people I wanted to see, do the work I had to do, and get back to the airport the next day. And I became pretty good at it. But I guaranteed myself every time I knew exactly what kind of car I was going to get. That's obviously not how it is anymore, right?
Not anymore. Look, the market demands different things and people have different preferences, right? But fortunately, sure, you didn't say things like a VW Golf Chico, because then I'd know exactly how old you are, right?
But, is that even older?
Because at one stage, that was all, I mean, that was the car of car rental, right? If you had a VW Golf Chico, everybody wanted it because at some point, listen, we're South Africans, and South Africans knew how to disconnect the mileage cable so they could drive around and not be charged for the additional mileage and stuff like that. It was insane. There's a lot of stuff that happens in car rental that people will never believe if I start telling you. When a customer rents a car, there's potential of so much more to happen to that car before it gets back to us. But anyway, that's a story for another day. In terms of preferences, Garrett, we got to cater for the masses. So you'll know that the Chinese brands have flooded our market and people are loving it because it comes with all of the bells and whistles versus your standard car. So here at Woodford, we have to say that our founder was, he was very, very committed into the Toyota brand. So we still house probably like 60% of our fleet is still Toyota. We've got an amazing relationship with them, not to say we don't have with the other OEMs. So if I did say anything otherwise, please scratch it off the record.
No, but I mean, listen, you can. There's a reason that Toyota has the brand recognition it does, the kind of reliability and safety aspect of things, and also for most people, it's like it's convenience. I'm curious though. You opened this can of worms. Now you have to tell us. I met with a friend on Friday. I hadn't caught up with him for a long time. He told me he apart from all of his businesses that I already knew about, he also runs a car wash. And he said, you cannot believe the state that some of these people bring their own personal vehicles into his car wash. He said this one woman had a layer of crumbs and shit in her car, this thick. And she wouldn't pay the extra 700 rand to have it cleaned because she's like, no, there's nothing wrong with my car. Yeah, just disgust. People are disgusting. And we all know that there's that horrible adage. I hope it's not true, but people go, you drive it like a rental car. That people have no respect. And I'm sure that while there are lots and lots of good customers and you will extol their virtues, there are also those people who you need to put in their place. And I love using this show as an opportunity for you to vent and for other people in various services businesses to vent about how badly behaved some people are, how revolting the cars are when they return them to you. Takeaway packets and things, I expect, but there's probably worse, right?
Well, there's a lot worse. Should I just quickly take off my jacket? And
Yeah. So, go. No, I want to hear it.
So there's the element of cleanliness. I mean, that goes without saying. I mean, people will rent a vehicle. Yes. Naturally, it's not there. So we end up picking a lot of stuff that we shouldn't have to from the inside of a car. And some of the stuff is horribly disgusting. I'm not going to mention the details of the size of packaging and the stuff that's still in the packaging. So we leave that one. But people still leave bottles. And yeah, the car is just in an overall filthy condition. I think it's the same principle with the hotel room. When people check out, I'm one of those guys that will still dress my bed or make up my bed before I leave the room. It's just me and it's in my nature. But I think the bigger thing for us is, like you said, how they drive the vehicles, because they want to be speed freaks. Again, it's not theirs. They want to do donuts in the car parks. And the sad thing is that, remember, car rental companies, most of us are not insured. Most of the fleet is not insured. So we offer the customer an opportunity to go and take a waiver, which then means to them, I've got a security deposit held on my car for 5,000 grand. So no matter what I do to this car, I'm only going to pay 5 grand and I'm going to get away with it. Okay. So luckily for us at Whitford, we've got a very smart, intelligent system called Record 360. So what Record 360 does is that we can use a smartphone or a tablet, and we record the vehicle on video and we take photographic evidence of it. So when Gareth comes to get his car, we'll say to him, listen, Gareth, we've pre-inspected the vehicle, but just make sure that you check it before you take it, because maybe Kevin took a car next to you and Kevin's 12 kids opened the door onto yours. So we just want to make sure you're happy. So like 100. And then what we'll do is we'll send Gareth the video clips and the photos to say, Gareth, we've given you the car in this condition. So here you go. And then Gareth comes back and he's got 50 million dents on the car. The bumper's missing and he's got the biscuit tire on, and he says, but it wasn't me. I didn't do this. And then we'll say to him, but Gareth, funny thing that, because we've got this video and photos that we sent to you when you took the car, and that car was in pristine condition. So sadly, we're going to hold you liable to pay for the damages. That's one part of it, Gareth. The other sad part is that we do live in, and like you're saying, there are some naughty people out there who will use it as an opportunity to service their own cars at home. So they will rent a vehicle from you, from a car rental, and literally strip the car rental company for tires and wipers and spare tires.
You are kidding me. People do that?
I kid you not, my friend. It actually happens. There is so much in this industry that we go through. We go through vehicle accidents daily. We go through cars being stolen daily, cars being hijacked all the time. I mean, we've got tracker systems on our cars, but it doesn't stop them from still targeting car rental vehicles, smash and grabs. So it's not all the glory. I mean, some of our customers really go through traumatic experiences, and we try to do everything possible for them. We have a team of specialized guys that we go out and we say to them, we give that command, go recover. And so they fully kitted up with their masks on, and they got these. They go out and they recover for us, and they go and help customers.
So you have to plan for the worst and expect the best. I mean, some clients are terrific. They'll use the car. It'll get back to you. I always used to think it was a matter of pride and principle to refill the car when you return it. Do people still do that?
Well, a lot of them still do that, because when you don't do that, the car rental industry, we charge you what we call a refueling fee. It's a small fee just to then top up your vehicle. But I think the general masses will then go and top up the vehicle themselves, so they avoid being charged that. but if this segment will need to be a lot longer for me to unpack all the details that we see here in car rental.
Now I've forced you to talk about those aspects, which are fascinating, because these are the things nobody else talks about. And it does give, I think, all of us a little bit of insight, and maybe even provide us with the basis for some sympathy when it comes to, maybe we'll all be a little more responsible and thoughtful when we hire a car from Woodford in the future. But tell us quickly about, besides the service aspect of things, which I absolutely take your word for, What else are the major USPs, the unique selling points of Woodford? Go ahead and extol the virtues of your company so that we can all think about you when we go from airport to home, from home to work, wherever we need to be. Tell us about the best things.
Okay, so Woodford, again, privately owned, Durban-based company, and I know my CEO will shut me down for saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway because I love saying this. We almost operate like a Durban business, and I'm not going to say any more than that because I'll get into trouble for that. But we make a plan, Gareth. We, you know, when you deal with larger corporate companies, there's so many corporate ladders to climb, so much of red tape to cut through. But with us, we listen to the customers, and we can get back to a customer and make a decision within minutes. Can we do it? Or very rarely we can't, because we always make a plan. If Garrett says to me, I want a car for my wedding and it needs to be pink with white fluff on the bloody dashboard, Garrett will get it for you.
Wow.
We committed. That's what we'll do. If we don't have it, we'll go out and we'll get it for our customers, because that's what we do. Like I said, coming from car rental, I understand the pain points from a corporate customer. So if you sign a corporate agreement with us, what hurts you on your invoice when you're dealing with a lot of other car rental companies? It's these things like to have a car delivered to you or to be collected from you. You have to pay for that, right? Yeah. If I drive a car from Durban or from pick it up at Lanseria but drop it off at Oa Tambo, you have to pay for that. Yeah, at Woodford, you don't. Understanding this and understanding the better, you have to be able to adapt to the market. So I said, listen, we're not doing any of that. If a customer wants me to deliver or collect a car within a 25-kilometer radius, we'll do it free of charge. If a customer is fetching a car from one spot and dropping it off at the next in the same region, you're not going to pay for that. We don't pay for cancellation fees. If Garrett decides, you know what, I'm actually not going to travel, I'm not even going to phone them, we're not going to charge you a no-show fee. We do these little things, Garrett, because it's not just about the money. I'd love to take the money from customers. But we believe more in building relationship with our customers and building the trust. One of the things that I go out and say to people often is that I'd love to take your money consistently. Every month, if you're spending $100,000 with me, oh, I'd love it.
Sure.
But Garrett,
so
why are you spending?
You want to build the long-term relationships, which I think is the
relationship. Yeah.
All business. Absolutely. You know, I had this conversation with a friend of mine the other day. All business is actually down to relationships. And if you've got a good working relationship with somebody, you want to keep that. You're not going to, even if people offer you the world, you're not going to swap that relationship, because that person, the brand has a face. The person involved is the reason you deal with that company. And I think that's obviously evident from you. Listen, it's a great pleasure to meet you and to have you on the show. And I can promise you, for me, you guys will be top of mind next time I'm in the business of hiring a car, renting a car for the day, for the month, for the weekend, whatever it might be. And you have an awesome weekend.
Thanks a lot, Garrett. Your next rental is on me, complimentary.
No, don't worry about that. But thank you. Thanks so much, Kevin. No, what a pleasure.
Take care.
Thanks, dude. Lovely to see you. There we go. It's Kevin Pillay from Woodford Car Hire and our window seat for this week. You know, when you travel, you have to take all of these things into consideration. It's not just the plane ticket. It's all the other stuff. And if they can make it easier and better for you, then hopefully we've introduced you to somebody and a company that will be able to make everything smoother. All right. A limited edition says, am I the only one for whom today doesn't feel like a Friday at all? Feels like a Monday for me today, and I don't know why. No, it doesn't feel like a Monday to me. I've had a crazy busy week, so I am totally ready for the weekend, even if it means just doing nothing with both hands. Woodford is a good brand, says Melissa Hartland. Thank you, Melissa. And she doesn't clearly work for them, so that's a proper endorsement. Hey, I just bought a RAV4 hybrid. Okay, very good, Tokolosh. I haven't seen one of those for a while. RAV, my mother always wanted one of those cars. Not that that's a good or a bad thing, but good for you, Tokolosh. And then my best 4x4, says Hendrik, was a rental, a VW Polo. That thing went everywhere. Yeah, listen, dude. Some people, as you heard from Kevin, they abuse these cars. All right. I am delighted to welcome to the show. We were meant to have him on a while ago, and between him and I, we got confused about what the day was or where he was going to be. But I love this man. He's easily one of the funniest people in the world, not just in South Africa. And apparently he's running for a place called Joburgton. But we're going to find out what that's all about in a second. First things first, let's welcome a longtime returning champion of the Gareth Cliff Show and many of his own shows. Last time I had a conversation about his arcade game business, which we're going to find out about too. But here he is, Tall Ass Mo. Hey, Tall Ass.
Yeah, let's go.
How the fuck are you, my friend?
Good morning, number one Caucasian.
Oh, I've missed you, man. What's news?
I'm good. I can't complain. This weather is shit today, man. Oh, my God.
Oh, it's so shit. Yeah, and I forced you to get up really early, so thank you.
You're the most disciplined person I know, Gareth. I don't want to lie, bro. I don't know how you do it. You up early in the morning. You look fresh. Your hair is gelled up. Who does your hair, man?
Let me tell you something. I used to be more disciplined, right? When I was doing Monday to Friday every week, and I thought about this the other day. I certainly don't feel like I'm any kind of superhero for doing this stuff because there are lots of people. They're domestic workers all over this country who are up at like 3:30 in the morning to get to work on five different taxis, and they earn, you know, 7,000 rand a month if they're lucky. But
it's crazy.
I now do it once a week, and I cannot tell you how happy and relaxed and just good life is not having to wake up at 4:30 every day of the week. It's horrible. I don't know how people do it.
I don't know, but tell me something. Did you see Fresh is back on Kai FM?
Is he?
Yeah, him and Tato.
Oh, man.
Would you go back to
radio? Radio.
You'd never go back, yeah?
No. What for? I mean, I get to do all of the fun things. I get to talk to all of the amazing people I get to do here. I have this phenomenally smart, brilliant audience who choose. They don't just get in the car and listen to whatever's on. They choose to listen and to watch what we do on a Friday. There's no going back from that. That's like playing in the Premier League and then suddenly you go, nah, I think let's go for relegation. Let's go to the I don't know, the Iwiza Maize Meal second division or whatever it is.
I'm in my Tabas Black Like Me division.
Yes, sir. Okay, so there's so much to talk to you about. First of all, how's the arcade business going? Is that kicking ass and taking numbers?
Yes, it certainly is. As a matter of fact, we've now moved into the VR space. We've got a deal with a Chinese company whereby we are now able to supply local companies with VR-based machines. I don't know if you've seen them. They're mostly in the corner of malls. You see little bikes that look like they're from Tron.
But hang on. Before you get into all the new stuff, just tell people, because this fascinated me, and I only heard about it once you and I had finished the show last time, and we were standing outside on the balcony talking. And you told me that those old arcade games like Double Dragon, which I used to play as a kid, where you have the joystick and the four buttons.
Yeah.
You can sell people, like people can buy those or rent those from you, and they can put them in their houses, man.
That's correct, yes. A lot of guys actually call me to set up their man caves as well. So what I do is that I build arcade machines, foosball tables. I refurbish pinball tables, like nostalgia pinball tables. Like, I think the latest one we refurbished is called a Gilligan's Island. You still remember Gilligan's Island?
I don't know that I ever saw that.
Gilligan's Island basically was an American series. It was very, very famous back in the 80s and the 90s. So we just recently refurbished that for a client. He absolutely was in love with it. And also a Jurassic Park table as well. So what we do is that we also try and school the kids. We teach kids at different schools of specialization. Like, for example, I work with a school called Mpilisweni School of Specialization. They're based all the way in East Rand. And what the school does is that they actually teach their kids specialized skills so that when they leave matric, they can actually now start opening their own little businesses and do their own thing. So we teach them how to build arcade machines, how to refurbish pinball tables, and at the same time, how to backward reverse engineer current consoles. Like, for example, the PlayStation 1 has ran out of copyright. The copyrights have expired. PlayStation 2 up to 3 all those copyrights have expired. So that means now you can take those machines, hotwire them into an arcade table and download a shitload of games onto it and have it
available. So hang on. I just got to name a couple of these. So Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yes, we've got that. It's definitely there. That copyright yes. for Sonic the Hedgehog, it ended in 2002. Same thing with Mario Brothers. Same thing with all these other old school games. They don't refresh the copyright license on the game. So once it expires, they just move on to the next version of the game. So the older ones can now be played publicly.
Okay, I have to... this is mind-blowing because I know how brilliant you are on the comedy stage. I've seen you do your stuff on television. I've heard you on radio. You're such a talented man. And then you've got this whole other separate business where you are doing something that it doesn't just have nostalgic value like the stuff I love. Yeah. For people who this is competitive and it's advanced and it's technologically going into new spaces. Just one last thing on the nostalgia. Do you make those air hockey tables?
Yes, we do. And the punching machines as well. So basically anything you ever grew up with at an arcade, we basically have those machines. We know how to outsource them. We know how to find them. Like most of these machines we find in old warehouses packed with dust and nobody cares about them anymore. And we just buy it off the guys and fix them up.
Okay, so how do people find out about this? Where do they? Because I know there are going to be people in this audience of ours who want to buy a air hockey table for their man cave. They're going to be people who want to have one of those old consoles with, you know, the wooden ones that go like this.
Yes, those are the
ones. They want to put that in their veranda at home or whatever. Yeah. Where can people get hold of this stuff?
Okay, on Instagram, we called TAM Gaming Community. The TAM Gaming Community. It's TAM Gaming Community on Instagram, on Facebook. Or they can follow my personal page, or less Mo the Gamer. And they can just drop us a DM. We have a selection and a whole catalog of all the machines that we have available on the TAM Gaming Community page. If they want customized arcade machines, for example, I can take a cabinet and customize it with your face, your brand, your logo. So we do it for restaurants. I service quite a few Spurs as well. I don't know if you've seen, there's a couple of Spurs that have arcade machines for the kids. We basically service, manufacture, and refurbish machines as well.
It's so funny you mentioned that because, you know, there's this shared South African childhood experience of people of a certain age where our parents would take us out for dinner, which was already the most exciting thing ever because we didn't go out for dinner like
all the time.
Often. You know, I remember my parents and the one couple that they were closest friends with, who were like my other parents, then we would go out together and there were five kids and there were four parents and we would go to a Spur or whatever and we would have, you know, the burger or whatever. And then while the parents were sitting there talking shit for like an hour after supper, we would go into the arcade, which was next door, either at a Bimbo's or whatever it was. Yeah. There was always an arcade around there. And we would play these games. And that's how I remember like some of the most happy moments of my childhood. And we couldn't get enough of these games. Like if they wanted to leave after an hour and a half, we were like, no, stay in there. Keep talking shit because we're happy here. We just want to keep playing this stuff.
My only crazy memory about Spurs is that my parents would never allow me near the salad bar. I don't know why.
That's because people would drop pubic hairs in the salad van.
Yeah. They're like, you do not eat from that salad bar. Do you hear me?
All right. I love this. Tell me, are you still mates with Mike Bolles? Because you and he were like very close for a long time. He's such an interesting guy, that. And what a weird combo. Tall ass Mo and Mike Bolles. I'd love to walk into a restaurant in South Africa and see the two of you sitting there talking to each other. I don't think anyone would look at any other table.
It would be crazy because the thing is, you wouldn't understand what we're saying, Gareth. We speak in Afrikaans 80% of the time. And the thing is, Mike and I share the same shoe size. So he has a difficulty with finding the right sneaker. So every time I buy a sneaker, I buy the same pair and I give it to him. He's an absolutely amazing guy, bro. He was actually now cracking the most craziest cases. He's actually busy now with the big that a lot of South Africans weren't aware of. Is this, if you remember, there was a business lady who declared herself to be dead, but she wasn't dead. still alive, and she was still using the social media pages and stuff like that. So Mike called me up and said, yo, listen to this fucking Bluxum's story. He always gives me the, he gives me the source all the time. She's like, this is the dumbest dead person who's alive.
You know, he deals with so many crooked people, but one of my favorite things, I occasionally see him pop up on social media, and he was talking about like discipline at schools, and he's big on that. He says he thinks it's a very bad idea that kids don't get like a hiding every now and then, because let's face it, I mean, that's how I grew up. I'm sure that's how you grew up too. You got a clap if you were out of line, right?
Definitely, definitely. There's a saying that says, my mother always lived by it. You spare the rod, you spoil the child, right? You know? So sometimes it's very important that, you know, our kids should receive some sort of discipline. But then I fully agree with Mike when we say that we sometimes have to discipline our kids in a way that they can really feel the fact that what I've done is wrong, or I should never, ever do this shit again. So now we have to come up with new creative ways on how to punish these kids. You know what I'm saying? Because you can't put a hand on them. So now we put them underneath couches. We hang them on the roof. You know what I'm saying? We put them outside to expire. You know what I'm saying? So we try. Because taking away a tablet or a cell phone really isn't that much of a hardcore punishment.
No.
Maybe crack the screen a little bit, you know? Just make them feel it, you know?
How are your children?
My kids are doing so well, bruh. Do you know, can I tell you something? I felt that my kids were having a tough time with being sociable with other kids, you know, because they were attending a small private school called Christian Life Primary School. And in their class, it's like five or six of them in the class. So every time we'd go to spaces whereby there's quite a lot of people, my kids were like really weird. Like it's like they have this weird social disconnect kind of vibe, you know, because they're not used to being in spaces whereby there's a lot of people. So I decided to do a social experiment, right? So I took the kids out of that school, all right? I put them down the road at Bethlehem Primary.
Uh-oh. What happened?
Oh, my God. So they were kids from all over the place. They got friends from Alex. They got friends from Calvin. They got friends from Bethlehem. So it's like, I've seen the difference. And they're speaking a little bit more vernac, because they just wouldn't speak vernac at all, you know? So it's like I can hear the South African tone in their voice now. They're saying things like, yo.
Okay. Well, you know, listen, though, this is a thing. I know a lot of Black parents, friends of mine, who are worried because their kids don't speak any vernac. Zulu, Isixhosa, Tswana, Venda, whatever it is that they speak, they're not doing that because their friends don't speak it. And at the schools, they either speak only English or they'll speak English and some language that isn't even from here.
True. But there's one province that maintains their discipline when it comes to vernac. I have to give it up to KZN.
KwaZulu-Natal.
I have to give it up to KZN. No matter how brilliant the kids speak English, or no matter how brilliant the schools they go to, but when they get home, it's first language. It's Zulu. Their parents don't want to hear a word of English, bro. You know?
You know, so, I went to a primary school in KwaZulu-Natal, and it was it wasn't a government school. I think it was a little, but it wasn't a private school either. It might have been a government school. But I remember we had to learn, they had Zulu when I was, I don't know, 6, 7. And one of the first things they taught me was, I'm a little teapot in Zulu. You want me to do it for you? You want me to do it?
Go ahead, bro.
Minangi tipoti, lo mpopo wame, lasis bambo sani, latangulo, latangulo.
Don't ever do that shit again, Gareth. For the sake of the viewers, guys, please, no, I do not encourage you. Mina ni tipoti. Tipoti.
Tipoti. Oh, bro. No, I remember that. And then they taught us.
Yeah.
Oh, there's so many. What was the other one that I did? There were a couple of things that they taught us that I've never ever forgotten. Speaking of like Woodford car hire from before. But I still, you know what's amazing?
Yeah.
It's like I can, if people are speaking, and there's a difference between KZN Zulu, and Zulu that is spoken everywhere else. Because if you go into like rural KZN, that is a pure, undistilled, or rather distilled, totally different form of Zulu than you get like on the streets of Joburg, for example.
Very true. I barely understand it myself, bro.
Yeah. It's much more difficult, and they take it super seriously.
Yeah.
But I remember if people speak very, very slowly, like if I meet a retarded Zulu person, I can understand most of it. But if it's someone who speaks normally, I'm in big shit, man.
So you need to speak to a Zulu who's got a little bit of a tism.
So meet someone who's a bit slow, a slow adult, then I'm good.
No, I got you, bro. No, you know, the thing is, I think vernac is very important. I think kids shouldn't lose their culture. I mean, at least if they know the basic forms of communication, greeting and asking how much, you know what I'm saying? If you know how to say how much in any language, you'll survive anywhere around the world.
Yeah, for sure.
That basic respect, like just understanding, you know, the boundaries of different cultures. Some of the cultures don't hug. Some of the cultures don't shake hands. Other cultures, they kiss on the cheek and they bow to each other.
But look at Afrikaners, right? And look at how they've protected and preserved their language. It's the second biggest language in the country. It's ahead of English, actually, as the home language of most people. And you look at how that community has, they've built schools, they've built universities, they have cultural institutions that look after this stuff.
Yeah.
If people aren't going to do that themselves, I mean, the government's not going to do it for anybody, right?
They won't. The thing is, Afrikaans people, one thing I love and I commend about them is that they've got this great sense of community. Like you see where we in Kameelfontein, it's a farm type area, you know? It's the same area. Mike stays in the very same area. He's got a flamingo rescue farm not far from.
He's like your next door neighbor, isn't he?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. And he has this sense. He taught me that there's a sense of community around the farmers in that area, like the Boere Mensa in that area. And is that, number one, they always communicate. Number two, they have each other's backs. Number three, they create their own service deliveries. So, for example, they don't rely on the government to come and remove the trash. They've got their own trash cycling system. They don't rely on, for example, SPCA to come and remove dangerous things like snakes, because we have a lot of snakes in our area, man.
That themselves.
You know, they do it all themselves. If things go broken, if a water pipe bursts, three people will come out with their tractors and they'll grab their employees and show them how to fix the pipe. They're not going to wait for government. Get there. So I think that's one thing we can learn from them is sense of community. Look at Oranje, right?
Yeah.
Oranje a couple of times. I've been there maybe two or three times with Mike. And every time I go there, there's always some sort of new improvement. They're basically going to be self-sustained. They're going to be self-sustainable by 2030. They don't need electricity from Eskom. They don't need water from Rand Water. They don't need food other things that are imported from overseas. They do everything themselves in that community and they're thriving.
Yeah, I look at what's going on in America and I think about race relations in America and then I think about what we've got here. We are so much better off than they are. In America, they are much more, there's a lot of tension. You know, you would think post Barack Obama, things would have got better, but in America, it's worse. South Africans, the average South African white person and black person get along better than I would say almost anywhere else in the world. What we've got to sort out, and I don't know if you've got strong feelings on this, but you know, the big issue of the moment, and it's certainly coming up in politics, you've got people like Herman Mashaba and Gayton McKenzie talking about it all the time, but this idea of, you know, the rest of Africa is not welcome here. And the fact that we treat immigrants, and listen, don't get me wrong, I don't have massively strong feelings about this, but I think if you want to live somewhere, you've got to go through the process and do what everybody else has to do, especially if you want to partake in public services and that kind of thing. But I think we've got a shitty attitude to the rest of the people on this continent, and it's becoming more and more of an issue. It was huge last week. We had those protests. Luckily, nothing really severe happened.
Yeah.
But you know, people don't feel as safe. If you are, and you can tell if someone's from Zimbabwe or Malawi or Zambia, they sound different to us.
Yes, immediately.
But I don't ever want anybody to think that just because of who they are, especially with the history of this country, that they're going to meet with violence or that they're not going to be able to settle here if they follow the legal processes. I don't know if you have strong feelings on this.
We all know that xenophobia is a paid-for thing by the government, bro. Like, you know, it's somewhere, somehow, up there in the government, like, there's somebody who has planned this thing to happen. And it's another way to swindle money, my brother. Look at that. 600 million rand was readily available for the 30th of June, like that, boom.
Yeah.
We didn't even see 600 rand worth of protection services out in the streets. It was just quiet. Nobody went to work.
Also, where the hell are those police every other day of the year when ordinary South Africans are getting mugged and hijacked and killed?
You know what? I don't have a problem with people coming into South Africa from different countries, whether it's on asylum or whether it is for business or work or pleasure, whatever it is, as long as you respect the culture. Like, looking for example, there's this big, super major problem with, like, for example, a Zimbabwean disrespecting South African culture. I'll give you one example. I don't know if you know a guy called Lebu M, right?
Yes, of course.
So now Lebu M is one of our South African treasures, right? Grammy Award winner. Lion King sells out internationally around the world. What an amazing movie, right? And he's made a hell of a lot of money from this product, which has put South Africa on a map whereby we never thought would ever be. You know, and he, in his Broadway production, he's hired a lot of Zimbabweans, a lot of Malawians, a lot of South Africans. He works with Africans across the platform, you know. Then comes along this fucking idiot of a fucking comedian, Learn More Jonasi. I mean, listen to the name, Learn More. But he
Learn
feels,
More.
Yes, Learn More. Like, what the fuck? Like, you know, it really annoys me. Like, goddamn.
What has this guy done?
He went ahead and insulted the Lion King anthem, the Lion King song. You know, when Lebu M goes, Nansingonya,
Mama.
Yes, that is like, that is an African royalty cry. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
This dumbass nigga went on to a podcast called 154. It's hosted by two Nigerian African Americans. And he voluntarily went ahead and tried to explain the meaning of that praise. And he said, oh, look, it's a lion. Oh, my God. That's not what it means.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. You know, Lebo M's been on this show before, and he's a tremendously talented and a very, very decent human being. He made Hakuna Matata famous. That's not South African. Yeah. That's Tanzanian. Swahili. That's Swahili.
Yes.
And if we keep, you know, there's nothing that irritates me more than tribalism when it's used negatively. There's nothing wrong with a bit of tribalism if you have pride in where you come from, your family, your ancestors. I love that shit. I think that stuff's so important, and people should be proud of their own cultural history. But tribalism, when it's used to divide and to break things down and to separate people and discriminate against them and be mean to them because they don't fit into your tribe, I think that's just the worst thing we can do.
It's absolute bullshit, man. I mean, the kid has been taunting Lebu for quite some time now. I mean, and I find it so fucking irritating that South African comedians never came out to his defense. I was one of the few people that actually came out and said, actually, Learn More, you fucking disrespectful piece of shit. This is our culture. What the fuck do you know about Zimbabwe? What do you know about South Africa and Zimbabwe? And he was like, Learn more. Yeah, learn fucking more, bro. But yo, dude, level of education, very low. Very low educational. You understand? And I asked myself, why would he go ahead and disrespect South African culture like this? And then the thing is, he continues goes ahead taunting him and posting. He's now doing a tour, right? With the saying that he's doing a lawsuit tour because Lebu's suing him for $27 million, right? And unfortunately, Learn More doesn't stand a chance. They actually served him while he was performing on stage at LA Improv, you know? So,
oh, wow. I
think these are the kind of things that we shouldn't take no nonsense off. We protect our fucking culture. You don't.
No, I got you. I got you.
No one has the right to explain what South Africa is if you are not South African. You know what I'm saying? You can't explain.
Durban Dope says politics and politicians cause these divisions between cultures, religions, and races. And we know that's true, right? The politicians profit from making us hate each other, and they find any new thing they can to make us distrust, disrespect, distance ourselves from each other. That's obvious, and you already brought that up. Belly yes. Vocal Radio says, I wish we had more, I wish we had other languages other than English and Afrikaans in school. Well, I mean, yeah, you're never too old, dude. I think he's out of school already, but I think that's very true. The more languages you have in your arsenal, the better for you, right?
Yes, and I think your mind as well, it becomes a little bit more expanded. Your train of thought also becomes more universal, you know, because people don't think the same everywhere, you know. The languages also influence the level of understanding and the level of culture that you have and the level of education that you would have, you know, because there's some of the languages that are not available on university level. You can't study in those languages, you know. So we should be very grateful that in our country, we have UKZN, we have Mhlaba Walingana, where you can go there and learn in Zulu from beginning to end, you know. So we are very, very blessed.
I mean, you laughed at Tipoti earlier, but I mean, I drove past the University of Pretoria the other day and it says, University. And I'm like, yeah, come on. All right, so here's Darren Dixon says, I remember Mo chatting with me in Rosebank about Scientology, random meeting, but awesome little memory.
Yeah, I am a Scientologist, yeah, so yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I joined Scientology now. It's been 2 years now.
What belt? Are you black belt? I mean, what's the 33rd? What are the degrees? How do you get to be a operating thetan? Tell me this shit, man. Yeah.
I joined Scientology simply because they have this notion against psychiatry and psychiatric medication. I hate that shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. I'm not the person. I remember there was a point in time where I was on Epilim and I was on, like, you know, all these weird medications that help with anxiety and nervous breakdowns and stuff like that. And it just dumbed me down. And I felt like, excuse me, my sense of humor was even disappearing because my mind was not as fast and sharp and witty as it should be. So I got introduced to the Church of Scientology. And what I've learned through them is that, you know, you don't need medication to actually access the deeper portals of the mind, you know. So there's different kinds of medication and stuff that you would learn that will assist you and help you to actually get your mental frame back into normal.
I mean, don't you think that everything now, and especially with kids at the age that your kids are, having a mental illness is almost like part of your identity. And you know, we have Dr. Hanan on here, who's just my favorite psychologist because he's practical. He's like, these are the things you can do to make your life better, and none of it is just sitting there on a couch talking to him. And talk therapy. He gives you practical ways to improve your life. And he's one of the people who has won me over to some of the things that in psychology I was massively suspicious of. Yeah. But I think everybody also medicates everything these days. Every problem that you have, there has to be a medicine to fix it. And I don't think that that's the case for most people. Most of us, you've got to, life is not going to be easy all the time. I hear a lot of people saying, oh, that makes me uncomfortable. And I think, what kind of soft creature are you? What kind of pathetic human being expects life to be comfortable all the time? I know you, and I've known you for a long time. You've been through some tough times.
Yes.
Saying I'm not comfortable doesn't help you get out of it.
No, it doesn't at all. As a matter of fact, you don't want to be comfortable in life at all. I don't believe in being comfortable. Once I'm comfortable, I get worried. I'm like, no, I'm stagnant. Comfortability equals being stagnant, you know, so you can't be comfortable. You need to always strive for more. That's the human nature in itself. Human nature only settles down when you can't do nothing no more. And even when you're in your 80s, you still have dreams. You still have things that you want to do, you know?
Hey, what's happening in comedy at the moment? Because I haven't been on the ball as I usually am. I haven't been to see a live comedy show for a long time. I feel like I should because I love it. It always makes me inspired and energetic. And laughter is the best medicine. We're talking about medicating. Laughter is the best medicine. Yes. What's happening in comedy, though? Because all the names that I used to know don't seem to be doing as much stand-up anymore. Are there not enough places to do stand-up?
It's not that there's not enough spaces to do stand-up. I think that now the comedy industry in itself has got a major divide. It's got a very, very big divide. It's very clicky as well. Like, there's certain comics that stick together and do gigs together and they click together. And at the same time, there's comics who have now built their brands to such an extent whereby they don't need to do ensemble shows with other people anymore. Now, the one thing that people are complaining about a hell of a lot right now is that big Savannah comedy show that's happening in South Africa. It's called Bafani Bafani.
Yeah, that's the one that Trevor's doing, right?
Correct. Now, the problem is this. Yes, you've got local South Africans on there, right? Bafani Bafani means Bafana Bafana. Bafana Bafana is South African team. Then they go around, then they fuck around and put Learn More Jonas on the lineup. Really? Really, really? What the fuck, Trevor? What the bloody actual fuck, bro?
This motherfucker. You know?
Like, dude, it doesn't make any sense. That show should be an opportunity for local South African comedians to participate in. Now you're going to bring fucking Learn More Jonas. You can't even look at you straight in the eyes. I mean, his one eye is there. The other is over there. You know what I'm saying? And on top of that, is that why would you want to have a person who ridiculed South African culture to be on a South African cultural show? Fuck that nigga. I'm going to pick it outside that show. If they don't remove that nigga off the lineup, we're going to pick it outside with boards and signs. I promise you, bro. Trevor will not forget me that day, bro. He won't forget. I'm on a serious mission, man. You can't disrespect our culture like that. And then we must
But how much I love you ranting about Learn More. This is my favorite part of the morning.
Bro.
But hang on. How much of comedy is now because of the internet, right? And because of social media, which is now it's old news, but the clip comedy world where you get your fill from watching 20, 30, 40 second clips that are on Instagram or TikTok. And that kills the live comedy because people go, oh, well, I don't need to see it. I've just seen, you know, enough on my phone. I don't need to go anywhere. And it doesn't cost you money. I think it's bad. I think it's in the long run, it's going to hurt comedy. Because I remember when you and I last spoke about comedy, which is not what we talk about normally, but I remember you telling me and this is years ago, but you said there was a real camaraderie. Like everybody knew each other, they supported each other, they would do these big shows. I mean, I remember the days of David, the Blacks Only shows, which were phenomenal runaway successes. People didn't want to miss it. It was a calendar item for them every single year.
Yeah. Now the thing is, it's like, comedy has become dissolved by TikTok. You're absolutely right. Now what we are doing is that like the real stand-up comedians, you'll find an influencer calling himself a comedian but has never stepped on a stage before to do stand-up comedy. So now the word comedian has been diluted so fucking bad that if you can do something funny online, you are now a comedian. I'll give an example. I'll tell you one thing. Funny Chef, you are not a comedian, my sister. Okay? Please, stop today. You are not a comedian. You're an overweight lady that can cook funnily, very finely. I can't explain, Jesus Christ. There's people who try and do stand-up comedy online and think that it overtakes the stage. When we put these motherfuckers on stage, they can't even speak in front of an audience of 5 to 10 people. Do you understand? Because you're in front of your cell phone and you're brave. Fuck you, tall ass smoke. Then when it's time to meet me on the stage, you have stage fright. People don't know who the hell you are. You don't sell tickets. You know what I'm saying? So I think that comedy really, really, it needs to go back to its original sense. We are now forced to end up doing these comedy skits online to advertise for people to come to the live shows now.
Well, you know? I mean, there are comedians I've spoken to tell me that what they do now, not them, but they've seen other comedians doing this. They set up, they've got someone with a camera and then that person is basically clip farming. So they don't really care about the show because what they're doing it for is not for the audience who's paid, who's sitting there. They're doing it so that they can have a clip that they can put out on social media later. And that's the real reason they're doing these shows, so that they can look like real comedians. Let me tell you, if I went to a show, if I were a paying customer and I sat there and I realized that we were the side show and the real show was this guy farming for clips, I would be furious.
Yeah, no, it is. It does really happen, especially with a lot of comedians that are up and coming, you know. I think that the quality and standard of South African comedy has been escalating. It's really, really been getting better and better. You know, I mean, we have comedians like, for example, what's this boy? Dylan Oliphant. What a fucking natural, yeah. Bro. Absolutely, yeah. Amazing. Every single award that guy has won, he really 100% deserves that shit, you know? But you also have to look at the fact that the Comic Choice Awards is not based on what the people have to say. It's based on what the industry says. So if another comedian can vouch for you, you can be nominated as a stand-up comedian, or you can be nominated for an award. Now, that has caused a lot of divide in the industry, because now people are becoming clicky, you know? They don't want to vote for you because they know that you already have something going on. I mean, you're on TV, bro. Why should I vote for you? You know, let me get all my other comedian friends to vote for me. Your career must end because it's our turn now, you know? So it's kind of a weird space. Fuck the Comic Choice Awards. I don't participate in such bullshit, you know?
I won't. But you know what that is? I mean, that's the same as so many other things. Jealousy. And I remember when jealous down was a popular saying in this country.
Yeah.
These are communists. These are people who think that everybody must get the same, where talent and merit are not rewarded. And you know, comedy is a tough business. You only are as good as your last show. People don't remember what you did 6 years ago, but you were slogging in the trenches 10 years ago. Some people have been trying and working and failing publicly in front of people, failing for years to get as good as they are.
Mm-hmm. And it's the only job where you get instant gratification. You will know right there on the spot if you were shit or if you were good. You know what I'm saying?
100%.
And I think that the nature of stand-up comedy right now in Africa needs to be more internationalized. People need to go out there more. We need to go perform overseas. We need to go perform in different African countries.
Hey, but isn't that what Learn More is doing?
No. Nah, let me tell you something. Now, the thing is, Learn More does derogatory comedy. You know what I'm saying? It pisses me off. I mean, how many times are we going to tell America, my neighbor is a lion? You don't have a fucking lion as a neighbor? What the fuck bullshit is that? He's got some other joke where he's like, in my village, we put in a traffic light, and everybody took selfies with the traffic light. Nika, you've had traffic lights in Zimbabwe for fucking eons.
Speaking of Zimbabwe, did you see that Emmerson Mnangagwa, the president there, who's like 100 years old, he just changed the law so that he will be president forever.
For two more years.
Ever. Motherfucker.
Let us be fair. Can we die first, then get another president?
Exactly.
The president, and I'm still alive. Wait for me to die. I'm going to die. Don't worry.
Like my hero, Robert Gabriel Mugabe. Fuck's sake.
It's absolutely ridiculous, man. You can't change policies to benefit yourself, you know? And I think that's why that I believe a lot of Zimbabweans should go back to their country and fight for their country.
Yeah.
Go back. Just go back. Because look, if you think about it, in Zimbabwe back in the day, there was a time where they had their own form of xenophobia. And by the way, xenophobia is only described in South Africa, but not in anywhere else around the world if you come to notice, right? But anyway, the Zimbabweans actually kicked out all the Malawians, number one.
Yeah, that's true.
They kicked out all the Europeans.
Oh, wait. There was even, I mean, in Zimbabwe, people don't want to talk about this because they look at, you know, the end of colonialism and independence and Robert Mugabe, but they don't think about the massive issues between Shona and Matabele people. Huge, big, huge issues.
Definitely they are. And the thing is now, the Matabele people are coming to South Africa fronting as South Africans because our language is sort of almost
it's the same. Yeah.
Yes. And then the Shona people are stuck and staying that side, running their own country, thinking that they're doing a better job, of which they are not. I really honestly believe that everybody that has got a problem with running away from their country because of asylum, we understand the war-ridden countries. That we get.
Sure.
Like, for example, the guys in the Middle East, the Palestinians, God bless their soul. Like, I think that those kind of countries deserve to be, you know, taken out to asylum. They can get asylum. But then, if you're Nigerian, bro, I mean, go back fucking home, bruh. Go and fix your goddamn country. Did you see that Nigerian fucker that got arrested in Cape Town for driving a fucking Maybach that he's from South African online money, and then he wore Zulu attire saying, fuck you, Zulu niggas ain't shit. I thank God for the guys that actually followed this guy, investigated him, and finally put him behind bars. He must fuck off.
Well, I'm sure your friend Mike Bolles would love to look at that story as well.
Definitely. So
I want to play a clip. James, have you got that clip of King Misuzulu? Because apparently this is going viral this morning.
Oh, man.
The Zulu King.
Wife.
You've seen it?
I've seen it, bro. Oh,
okay,
my
I haven't seen it. So hold off. I want to see this first. Okay, let's have a look. James, the King of the Zulu.
Oh, man.
Oh,
how?
My God.
How?
Do you understand what he said in the first 2 minutes of that video, bro?
Well, I know towards the end he told them to get the fuck out, but...
Yeah, I can't even repeat those words, man. That's the king, bro. Oh, my God.
So, in other words, we've come a long way from Bayete Nkosi and
Don't forget, he grew up in America.
Yeah.
He grew up in America. You know what I'm saying? And he does.
But he looks like, in that clip, he looks like the average guy I would bump into in a Shabin.
That's correct. The stomach, the wife beater vest, the beer. Telling his kids to fuck off. Yeah. You know, like the swear words that he hit her with in the beginning. Oh my God, Gareth. I could never repeat those words with my mouth. And for the fact that he said that to his first elderly wife, he's like, I got younger bitches than you. Get the fuck out of here. He's like, I got younger, hotter bitches than you. You better get the hell out of here. You know, so it's, oh man, it's crazy. I think that, you know, those kind of scenarios, those situations should never be in the public. It should never be in the public space. I believe that the royals, somehow the royals have got the right to live in their own little world that
we were talking about. So Mfundo, who's been a listener from day one of this show, he sent me that clip. And Mfundo, he's Zulu. He lives in Durban. He came up and lived in Joburg for a while. He's a teacher, really good guy. And he's like, you got to see this clip of the Zulu King. But it started our conversation earlier about how, like, some things you still want to be mysterious.
Yes,
like some stuff we should not have all access to everybody all the time. Otherwise, all of these institutions, we're going to see that these are just normal human beings, and it's going to ruin the mystery.
It's going to crumble. I mean, seeing him in a state where he's drunk like that, you know, swearing at his wife, the queen of the Zulus, someone that everybody respects, you know what I'm saying? And for her to be spoken down upon like that, that's classic GBV case right there, man. That's like super weird shit, man. That is emotional abuse. It's cringy. It's very, very cringe to watch, you know? So I think that in our culture as well, as African men, we kind of have this superiority over women whereby we can be able to stand up and be like, listen,
I just want to say, I mean, like, again, I'm outside of this. I have no dog in this fight, so to speak. But I also have to say that, and this is not true for the clip that we've just seen, and it's not true for every woman by any means, but I see a huge amount of disrespect from women towards men, and I'm not defending GBV. I want people to be absolutely clear on this, because that's not what we stand for. It's not what anyone should stand for. Yeah. But I know a lot of black women who only value a man based on how much money he has. And they don't have any respect for those men. And then they complain when the guy doesn't respect them back. But their attitude is bad from the get-go.
You're 100% correct. It's the slave queen nature. That's what we have now in South Africa. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If your pocket amounts to the level of respect I'm going to give you, once your pockets run dry, reach your pockets run dry, disrespect goes out the fucking window. There's very few, there's very, very few seldom women who are left behind that are still willing to help a man reach his goals, even if it might be a little bit difficult here and there. But then we work together, we coincide together until we make something happen, you know?
Mo, I've got a friend, and he's one of the nicest people. He's a good human being. He's got character. Yeah. He's honest. He's got integrity. He's a decent man. He's worked hard jobs, like difficult, like laborious, unskilled labor jobs. And this man, he is solid as a rock. He's dependable. He's respectful of everyone around him. He told me the other day that he's struggling to find any woman who will give him this much respect, because they're not interested in his character. They're not interested in what a good father he might be, what kind of a husband he might make. All that these slay queens are interested in is this man's wallet. And if his wallet isn't fat, they don't give a shit what else he has, which to me is just as bad as it's those crazy men who are openly disrespectful to women. I think that's a horrible way to have a starting premise with anybody in a relationship.
That's 100% correct. And now if you understand how mainstream media has actually allowed this condition to spread even further, like, for example, I'm so glad Showmax shut down, bro. I don't want to lie. To fucking hell with those sons of bitches, you know? Honestly speaking, because if you look at the kind of content that Showmax was putting out there, South Africans lost interest in watching. There's a show, there's a reality show called This Body Works For Me. Now, this is what the show is about. Your body working for you. So it's five slay queen bitches, right, that are on the show. And they documenting them on how they swindle men for money, on how they sell their bodies online to get money, on how they're running OnlyFans accounts, on how they price the level of prostitution, on how they go out and get BBLs and they get, you know, body fixed and stuff like that. And then they use that to find rich men. Now, this is why we have Madlanga Commission today. It's because...
Okay, do the connection.
Because of these bitches, bro. They're like, wait a second, where the fuck do you get money to go to Dubai for 7 days and live the life you're living? It's Julius Mkhwanazi. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you see they arrested that Imogen Mashazi woman?
It's about fucking time. She's so disgusting, annoying. The pride she had when they were interviewing her. She had layers of cement, of makeup on her face. Do you see her in court today? Oh, my God. I love it when the cookie crumbles. Thank you, Lau. Thank you.
Oh, that's great. All right.
She was wearing a fucking beanie. No weed.
Yeah.
No,
yeah. Isn't it amazing, though, when they arrest these women who, like, have the makeup and the hair and the outfits and the Louis Vuitton bags and shit. Yeah. When they arrest them, they go back to like the
humble
and then they wear their shittiest outfit and they're like, oh, you must feel sorry for me, and suddenly all the pride is gone, man, because they know they're going to jail.
The only person who really kept the fashion levels up is Kat Matala's wife. She doesn't give a fuck.
And him. I mean, like, the guy was in, he was I saw clips of him on the news yesterday. The guy's still snappy dressing, even though he's in jail.
Yes, he wears Fendi shirts. He wears, you know what I'm saying? He's really, really up to date with it. But I think that woman deserves to go to jail. Because number one, let's go back to that woman. Because we're always bashing men for some reason. I'm saying men are always in the headlines for the wrong reason.
No, you're right. You're right. We do.
With this woman, she was running Ikurulweni. And she had the responsibility, because she received information from IPED that says that Julius Mkhwanazi is responsible for fraud, corruption, installing police lights into people's private vehicles and so forth. Here's the document. Do something about it. Dismiss this person.
But it's worse than that. It's worse than that because she was the national chairperson of the Lottery Commission for a while. Now, you know the lottery. I've got one friend who, he plays the lottery, man. He plays it every week and he puts out these clips of like, I'm going to win. He's never won.
He never will.
Motherfucker. And then if you figure out that someone like Imogen Mashazi was in charge of the Lottery Commission and they were stealing. Now, remember, the lottery is meant to help charities. So it's meant to help poor people, children, disabled people, old people. This is not a get rich quick scheme for comrades. This woman was dipping into the lottery commission's money, and she was taking, she was living in a house that used to be Edwin Sordi's house in Waterfall Equestrian Estate, my friend. Do you know how expensive those houses are?
This shit crazy expensive. They're insane. 11 million, 12 million, 13 million rand. It's insane, you know. And for the fact that she also takes money from Ekurhuleni, I'm from the East Rand. I'm a Kempton Park boy, born and raised in Kempton Park all my life. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Stealing more than 260 million rand from Hospital View. The same woman here, the Ekurhuleni, it's like people take Ekurhuleni for a piss, bruh. It's like it's one of the municipalities that the people always contribute. They pay in the money, right? Thinking that they're going to get service delivery, but they don't get it. That's why there's such a huge budget for Ekurhuleni, is because of the community. The community is the one that's paying their rates and taxes every day or every month. You know what I'm saying? So they swindle that money and use it for their own personal game. I'm putting them on blast, bro. I really think that their day has come.
Yeah, that's her house. That's the house she was living in. Well, I don't know if it's her house, but she was living in that house.
That is crazy.
Right?
A government official.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But let's talk about the muhu of the day.
Who's that?
The munt of the day, actually. When's the last time you heard that?
I haven't heard that. Listen, I know what umuntu is, and that's not bad.
But a munt.
But when someone says munt, yes, sus.
Fucking who's Brian Mukhozi. Fucking Brian Mukhozi. He shot his own car, bro. The surveillance, they found the surveillance footage of him shooting his own car. And then he went ahead and said, I can't come to Madlanga Commission because my life is in danger. I almost got assassinated. General Khan tried to do the same thing. At least he got himself shot in the leg. I mean,
Do it properly. You know, take some pain.
Yeah, man. Come on. Shoot me where there's no nerve endings.
Okay. Two or three things. People want you to do something here. So first of all, limited edition, who I don't think this is very funny, but you tell us, please rate my comedy. What is the difference between a blonde and a brick? A brick doesn't follow you around once you've laid it.
Oh, come on. Really? That is the most misogynistic joke I've ever heard in my life, bro.
Okay, here's another one. Rate my comedy. Why shouldn't we hire midget chefs? Because the stakes are too high.
That is stupid, man. Come on. He's getting these off the internet or what, bro?
All right, so limited edition. You've scored 0 out of 2. Durban Dope says, Tall Ass Mo, please tell us your best dad joke. When people ask you to tell a joke, really?
Yeah, I've got one for them. I've got a bad dad joke.
Okay, go. Let's go.
Cool. So when you got your girl, right, and you're making love to her, okay, you got to hit her doggy style, okay? You hit her from the back, and then you tell her, I'm about to come, right? Then you pull out, okay? You come in your hand and spit on her back. When she turns around, you're like, Spider-Man!
Dude, that is not a dad joke. A dad joke is the kind of joke you would tell in front of the kids.
That's the joke you have to tell your boy when you go out there and make sure you pull out, young man.
Listen, I think you must be a hell of an interesting father to have. Dude, can we please go out at some point and have a drink? I would love to just sit and laugh with you for a whole day. I think it would be the most excellent therapy in the world.
That would be great, bro. I moved out of the embassy recently because I found out that's where all these Madlanga guys are staying, bro. So I'm like, fuck that. I'm going to get shot here, right? So I left. So I'm in Lone Hill now. So I think definitely we can still link up, right?
All right, great. Magic. No, we'll do that. I'd love to see you. Listen, you got my number. We'll talk. And for people who want the arcade stuff, we will also put a link in the description of the video. Yes. James and J9, if you could take care of that for us too. Tall Ass Mo, it's such a pleasure to see you, dude.
I'm so sorry. One last thing. I've got my big comment coming up on the 31st of July.
Oh, my God. Oh, wait. We didn't. Wait. We can't end the show yet because you still got to tell us about this. The mayor of Joburton.
The mayor of Joburton. So basically what we're doing here is that I'm trying to change the nature and the state of Joburton through my comedy. So I'm working with the local municipality. I'm working with the mayor of Klerksdorp. I'm working with the local councillors. And we're basically fixing it up. I'm trying to show Galston Anthony how the fuck it really is to be a mayor. Because that guy is never going to be the mayor. Not under my watch. Okay? So the mayor of Joburton is showing him how it, what you should do to be a mayor. Just practical examples, bro. Fix the city, close up the potholes, give out to the kids, and make sure that our place is a safe environment for us to live. So tickets are available at Web Tickets. I'll see you guys there.
I love it. All right, my friend, it is so good to see you, and best of luck with the rest of your weekend. Keep warm. Yeah. Thank you for waking up early to be with us. I love you. I have lots of time for you. Let's make a plan soon.
Definitely. I'll holler back at you. Let's have a cup of coffee soon. Thank you so much, Gareth.
Magic. Thank you, Mo. There we go. Tall ass Mo, everybody. One of the absolute unbridled, unhinged talents in this country, and someone who we can definitely see and hear more of. So go and see his show. He's going to change the mayoral race in, of all places, Klerksdorp. And he's such a fascinating human being. I mean, he's got just the most interesting world around him with, you know, Mike Bolles, arcade games. He's just fascinating. I love him. All right, that's all we got time for today. And I'm not going to let James play that Dutch song, and I'm not going to play the Puerto Rico song to finish the show today. So no, James, none of that shit. Not today. Instead, I'm going to leave you with a clip of A Chick in a Factory, which is also one of the things that we always have on the show. People just love it. So I don't see why we shouldn't, especially in honor of Alex Cage in Hong Kong. Here's a Chinese woman in a factory singing a factory song. And that is it. We will see you next week, Friday. And if you haven't already subscribed for the daily briefing, which is all live, we put all the details in the comments earlier, but we will also attach all of those details in the description so you can have that as well. Go and get them while they're free. We're going to go to subscription soon. I want you to test it out first. There's no point paying for something unless you know what you're getting. It's getting better and better. We'd love to know your thoughts on it too, especially the people who've been listening to this show for a long time. You guys are, you're a barometer for me of whether we're getting things right or wrong. So please let us know and tell your friends. And if they haven't tried it, they probably don't deserve to, but convince them anyway. All right, that's it for us. We will see you next week. Be good, everybody.